I did want to talk a little bit about something that happened that recently that I think symptomatic of an issue that's going to be going on, and you should probably pay attention to it if you give a shit about esports. I don't know. The esports media is in a very, very strange place. I'm sure you will have noticed that. What do I mean by that? Well, increasingly, we've seen cutbacks and closures and layoffs at reporting sites and media sites that could potentially have a profound effect, especially if, as everyone suspects, we are going to go into a recession. We're already seeing media companies making strange bedfellows, you know. It's like, I'm not going to criticize anyone in particular for doing this, because obviously I work for a publication that does this too. But it is a shame in a way that the type of sponsorship deals that I'm seeing across the board in media, you could make an argument to say it's probably not great to be adjacent to those things if you want to be completely free of any allegation, a conflict of interest or anything like that. But the bottom line is that's the money, and digital media is in the toilet right now. It doesn't make any money at all. And there's some good reasons for that, which I'll talk about, and there's some bad reasons for that, but I'm going to frame it through the lens of a specific example. Unfortunately, Jackson.gg is shuttered. It's going to be closed, I think, at the end of December. They are representative of a startup that had explosive growth, but still couldn't sustain themselves, still couldn't make it work in a, you know, in a manner that made it a good, solid business. I knew a lot of the writers at this publication, and obviously know Christian Slot and have vouched for him many times when Jackson was breaking stories. And it's just unfortunate that despite their success, they are now, we've lost one extra outlet that was doing good work. So you can see this is Christian saying Jackson GG is closed, even though we showed explosive growth, over 1.3 million visits after 4 months, exceeding KPIs with over 100%, following the website launch in July. God, was it only July? They only made it to December. Fuck me. The owners decided to quit. There are no dollars, rough times. I'm insanely proud of what we built with limited resources. Right now, I'll do my best to help every employee who wishes to stay in gaming and esports. And after the Christmas holidays, I'm going to start looking for my next adventure in comms, gaming, or esports. Feel free to retweet and reach out. And there you go. That's how ephemeral it all is. I didn't even realize it was that short. You launch in July, you're dead by December. That's fucking wild. And you've succeeded, ostensibly. I mean, I do think a lot of people that run these media sites, they don't really understand what a successful business model for a media company will look like. And they have a tendency to overhire. They have a tendency to pay people to create content that has no value. A lot of these businesses are poorly run. But if you set targets and your team smashed targets and you shut down anyway, well, that's just not great, is it? I mean, that you can definitely lay some of the blame on the management and the owners there for sure. Now, one of the things I did see, there was a lot of people on Reddit, there was some people on HLTV, and they were all saying, like, you know, oh, another tabloid shit esports website's been shut down. Boo-hoo, who cares? And it's like, that's just not a reflection of who or what Jackson is. Now, I will say, like, yeah, are we talking some ultra-high-level writing? You know, rip Bozo, dust to, ye shall not be missed. You know, putting rip Bozo in a headline. You're not exactly Sports fucking Illustrated, right? That's fair enough. But it is reflective of its audience and trying to tap into the current zeitgeist of where we are in esports. And they did opinions, they did polemics, obviously just general reportage about things that were going on. They had a good eye, I would say, in particular, for things that were going to trend. You know, stuff like this. VacBand XCSGO Pro Emilio asks for a second chance. I mean, bro, it's been fucking 8 years or whatever since you got VacBand live in a game. I don't know what you would do with that second chance, even if you got one, which you probably don't deserve. But, you know, they had a good idea for that kind of thing. You know, like, again, stuff like this. The most expensive AK skin in CSGO. And they were just good at finding stuff that would trend on social media because it's short, it's snappy, it's got a bit of a salacious hook to it, you know. So credit where it was due there. But people calling them tabloid trash, you know, I don't think they remember the reporting that they did. So I did just want to talk a little bit about, you know, Jackson's greatest hits, because they did have some really big stories that they got out there. A lot of them were done by Christian himself, you know. Who can forget this classic from September? Astralis set to remove config after fist fight in Malta. You know, there he is, looking mean and tough. A bit of a paper tiger, that guy. But, you know, and this is a really big story. This is a story that had profound impact. I don't think, without it going public, I think there might have been a chance for him to remain in Astralis if it hadn't have got out. And I think that would have been terrible. I think that would have been terrible for the other four players on Astralis. That sort of would have had to look him in the eye, knowing that he essentially robbed them of a chance to play at the major through his own selfish behavior. And also, I think, look, we live in a time when people are getting fucking blacklisted over tweets, getting kicked out of high power positions for being at a party with a bad person in the background and tweeting about it. So what should be the appropriate punishment for someone that has been repeatedly violent at events? You know, what should be the punishment for that then? If we're setting a very high bar of behavioral standards, you can't even tweet unpopular opinions. You can't say Fallen is overrated. If you say things like that, you need to be blacklisted, blackballed, removed from the community. Well, what do we do about somebody that's like, you know, representing an org and having a fight? What's interesting about this as well is, and this has got nothing to do with the topic at hand, but you do love a good segue when Richard's talking. I think it's amazing that he's waltzed back into Heroic, an organization he himself criticized and said were disgusting cheaters. He waltzed into that as a sub position, said it was all great, right? And everyone's gone, yeah, it's actually bad that he got kicked out of Astralis. It's actually bad. And I'm like, what? Like, he cost the org a chance to compete at the major. But no, everyone thinks it's great. There's been absolutely no punishment at all. Remember, he said he was going to go away and work on himself because he knew the gravity of what he's done. He was immediately back playing and standing in for people, supposedly with an injury that, if you remember the geniuses and doctors at Reddit, he can't actually play because, you know, with the pins in his leg, he has to keep his leg elevated and he can't sit like that. So checkmate, idiots. And it's like, no, he was literally playing for fucking, you know, Endpoint. He was literally playing mixes with MSL as soon as he got off the plane. He could have played for Astralis. It would have been, but, you know. But anyway, he himself has learned absolutely fucking nothing, and I think it's incredible because, you know, everyone's really going along with him as some sort of victim here. He also said the other day, this was just outrageous, config says he won't rule out a return. He won't rule out a return to Astralis. Like, why the fuck would Astralis take, I mean, that would be insane if they were to do that. And then he also said it's kind of whack. In this interview here, he said it's kind of whack that he has to prove himself again at a world final. It's like, bro, you want to know what's whack? That you couldn't fucking control yourself after like four fucking beers for what's probably about the dozenth time at an event, by the way. If you go through his entire history, everyone knows what he's like. So I don't give a fuck. You can call me out on what I'm saying. But bro, I've been at them events where you fucking acting like a cunt. So, at the end of the day, it's like, I think it's fucking whack that you've robbed, you know, players of their opportunity to play in a major. Players that might never get the opportunity to do it again. You know, like, Farlig. I think that's whack. But, whatever. We only know about that because of Jackson. Right? So I think that's an important story that they broke. They were absolutely on point with that one. They broke a ton of big stories. They had this one as well. This was big. Obviously, they were all over the device story from start to finish. They had really good insight on that. This is like, remember, HLTV aren't breaking any of these stories with all of their resources and all of their staff, right? And here we go. This was the when they were like, oh, device might be leaving NIP and going back to his priority team, which obviously we know the priority team was Astralis all along, and he was going back to it. They also broke the details of the Brolan purchase as well. It wasn't just, Danish insight they had. You can see here, Fnatic demand 750,000, close to the price of Nip's device. They had that covered. What else did they break? Yeah, here we are. They broke, because again, these are like, all, this is in no particular order. These are just all stories that they broke themselves. Astralis and Zonic do not extend their contract. This was obviously that Zonic was leaving Astralis, which, would have been unthinkable. Yep, it was Jackson that broke that one as well. And they even had, if you want to go even further back than that, and this must have been right at the start. Yeah, this is when I think they were just a Twitter account, I want to say. Let me see. Oh, here you go. So when he says July, he means July 2021. So yeah, they were around a bit longer than just a few months. Because look, that's in 2021. This is Config doesn't re-sign with Complexity. Close to joining Astralis. Another big story. These are all like big deal stories. Like Christian Slot broke a lot of shit. All of it true. All of it right. All of these stories came to pass. So people saying they were like tabloid. I don't know. Like it's just fucking short memory syndrome. And because they're all like dick suckers for pro players. Where it's like, nope, Sadakist can never work again for throwing a frisbee at someone, but Config, serial violent person, yeah, he deserves all the chances in the world, because of course. So yeah, they're gone, and man, there was a bunch of like stories where it's like they're not alone, There's like a ton of things wrong with the esports media model. I mean, you have to remember that we actually had a fucking insane assembly of talent being backed by ESPN back in, up until 2020. ESPN ended up just shutting down all of their esports editorial operations. Now think about ESPN and all the infrastructure they have, all the platforms they have to promote esports. And it's crazy. Because I remember when they first came into the scene, ESPN, I interviewed for the editor's job, the one that Slasher got initially and then had taken away from him. And I basically told him that I didn't think I could work in a world where you had to behave like a Disney princess on social media. I said it would be a short-lived relationship. I just said that in the interview. Because they were like, well, obviously, like they I don't know if I've told this story before. I probably have because I'm a boomer and I've only got four stories. But in the interview, they pulled up all these old tweets, and I can't remember exactly what the tweets were, but it was stuff like, and on the 10th of February, you said, if you think this, you should drink cleaning products. Do you think that was a sensible tweet to make? And they went through all of like these examples of tweets where I said things they didn't fucking like. And I went, I don't really give a fuck. So the interview went off to a bad part, went off on a bad, footing to begin with. And I don't think I was ever going to get the job. I think they just wanted to essentially sell me out because they even asked me about other candidates in my job interview. A job interview is going well when they start asking you about the other guys. But it was like I was going to Turner, so when I took that job interview, I just wanted to say I'd interviewed for an editor's job at ESPN. Just wanted to say that. I've had interviews with I had a very brief one with the LA Times as well, like a lot of people wanted to get in some esports reporting, and obviously with my reputation, people are going to want to pick up the phone and have a conversation. For me, I definitely dodged a bullet with this one because, I don't know, it just feels like the traffic they must have been getting, but they didn't make any money. It wasn't economically viable to keep them on. You can see you know, they had obviously Theon on fire, Emily Rand, Jacob Wolf, you know, and this was after, by the way, they'd scaled down to just them, essentially just a group of people that were really heavily focused on League of Legends, although obviously Jacob Wolf breaks stories outside of that game too. And they just couldn't do anything with it, you know? They didn't do what they said they were going to do with the video stuff. You know, they were talking about they were going to get all these live streams up and do like live streams of breaking news and stuff like that. Never happened. They didn't promote it through any of their mainstream channels. You know, you got a fucking you got a TV station, you got a cable TV network. You know, like, why aren't, you know, if you want your esports division to succeed, push them a little bit, but they never really did. And so they just sat on their own island doing their own thing. There probably wasn't any growth, essentially. But even then, from talking to people behind the scenes, they were hitting their targets. Again, the targets are what's wrong. So obviously we had ESPN. That fell by the wayside. More recently, we had Upcomer layoffs as well. Upcomer was another startup. This was Alexander Lee reporting in March this year, early in the year. Esports news site Upcomer laid off the bulk of the editorial staff despite 500% growth year on year. Spent hours talking to current and former Upcomer staff trying to make sense of the layoffs. Here's what happened. And then he gives a little thing. The layoffs were unexpected and unceremonious, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. Former staffers say they were denied their promised year-end bonuses, with many only agreeing to speak to me anonymously for fear of retribution from Enthusiast Gaming. Enthusiast Gaming is the parent company that owns Upcomer. You know, they're one of these media conglomerates. They own, like, you know, esports teams. They own gaming review websites. They own, obviously, this was the esports vertical. It's a cautionary tale that shows both the difficulties of building an esports media business and the callousness that can come with being a publicly traded company in this esports industry. My heart goes out to many people whose livelihoods are threatened by these layoffs. Now, if you looked at what they did when they first came onto the scene, I don't think it's going to look particularly good on the screens, because you know what the Wayback Machine can be like sometimes. But this was the staff they essentially launched with, right? You need to look at that, right? So this is a startup. This is a digital website. And this is the team. They have 3 people in senior management positions, 5 people in mid-management positions. Then you've got 9 staff writers and 8 video editors. Now, none of these people are on small salaries. We'll talk about the exploitative aspect of esports media in a moment. But none of these people, none of this website, none of these people were on small salaries, right? You know, people talk. You know, I have a very good benchmark of what even like the lowest earning writer was earning at this website. And let me tell you, it's good money. You'd be happy with it if it was you. So one of the reasons why it's sort of hard to sympathize sometimes is this immediately screams to me non-sustainable model, and I'll tell you why. So first of all, I'm going to talk about these guys up here, right? The management, okay? And so I thought it was interesting. I made this point. In fact, I'll bring up the tweet for later. Right, that's ready. We'll shelve that. But let's just talk about management structure. So first of all, Colin McNeil, as I said, he's one of these guys who doesn't really have a lot of industry expertise in terms of esports. If you look at his Twitter account, I can't anymore because he blocked me. You'll notice I don't screech about that like I'm mentally ill. He's more than entitled to. I totally understand why. You'll totally understand why in just a few moments. But, you know, when he tweets, this is a guy that, like, he'll ask, like, unbelievable questions like, guys, just want to say, I mean, do we think FaZe is the best team in CSGO right now? You know, after they've won like 5 events straight or something. And it's like, it's not even an engagement tweet. He genuinely seems to be like fishing for information. And it's like, dude, you are a senior editor. You run a fucking esports publication. Surely you have to know what the fuck you're talking about. Down the years, I've butted heads as more and more people from outside of esports have come into media positions. And I've done like what they call like feedback sessions. Essentially, when we're doing an article, they want to rewrite the article. And most of the rewrite is me explaining to them what I mean by what I say, because they don't know, because they're not from esports. And nothing agitates me more. If you don't understand the reference that I know my readers are going to understand, and I certainly understand, because I put it in there, that's a you thing. The edit shouldn't be about me explaining it to you. So that's one of my pet peeves down the air. I'm not a particularly tough edit, but if an editor hits me up like, you know, and what does this mean, and what does this mean? You go educate yourself, dickhead. You go educate yourself. Not on me to do it, mate. I got things to do. So, you know, Colin McNeil's just the archetypal one of those guys. Like, he's not clearly not endemic to the industry. He's out of his depth. But he gets to fail upwards into a six-figure job because the Score Esports has this huge successful app and successful YouTube channel. Because realistically, you know, surface-level opinions, surface-level information, digestible 10-minute videos, all presented in the standard flat YouTube format. That works. That works for the algorithm, and it works for the morons that consume that content. So, Sean Morrison, another guy, he was part of the layoffs. Not a dude I particularly like. I can't remember what it was, but he said something really unpalatable. In my opinion, he used like a really weird phrase when he was talking about Thorin. He was like, Thorin is digging his own grave or something like that. And it's like at a time, and it was at a time when Thorin was in one of his dramas and he was getting death threats. And I'm like, I don't know. If you believe in things like stochastic terrorism and that words have impact, maybe don't use language that is evocative of death at a time when someone's getting death threats en masse, you know. So I didn't like that, and it's one of those classic examples of this is a very mediocre dude with not a lot of experience or expertise that again gets to have a senior manager position because of who he knows or whatever, and doesn't hold himself up to any of the standards he would hold the rest of the industry up to. He doesn't walk the walk, you know. I mean, shit, you say a lot of things about me, I definitely walk the walk. Fun story, just today an esports organization messaged me and said, hey Richard, we love your work, we'd love to send you a jersey for Christmas. And I will read you the reply. Hi there, I really appreciate the offer, but I have to politely decline as I don't allow myself to accept gifts from orgs for ethical and conflict of interest reasons. Thanks for reaching out though, and have a happy holidays. That's how much of a fucking loser nerd I am when it comes to that shit. So, you know what I mean? I'm all in on that. I don't even take a free jersey. And then obviously Fionn on Fire, that's Tyler there. I love his work. But this is one of those appointments where it's got nothing to do with what he does well. He's a really good features writer. He's a prolific features writer, and he's a good features writer. They're very rare, and he's worth his salt. He's got a big audience, a big following. He knows how to play the clout Twitter engagement game with his stupid fucking tweets every day. Who's the best player in League of Legends? It's Faker, the guy you've written fucking 50 articles about, mate. But people go, Faker, obviously, it's Faker. No, I actually don't think. I think Faker's overrated. 500 fucking responses. So he knows what he's doing when I... So he's got like a lot of skills, upper management skills, nah, but sometimes you have to give like really good talented writers, you have to give them titles to get them into the fucking publication, because if you don't, they're like, oh well, I kind of feel that like you're not recognizing my skills and my talent, and I want to stand out from the rest of the rank and file, right? And it's like, okay, you know, fine, what title do you need? Again, I've had that to me when I've gone for job interviews and they've said like, you can give yourself any title you want. We'll make it official. You can be vice president, you can be this, you can be that. Like, who gives a fuck? It's all about, you know, how much goes into my bank account at the end of the month and how much work I got to do to get it. That's all I give a fuck about. Call me Susan. It's fine. I don't care. It just, you know, but some people are really pernickety about it because they want it to look good on a fucking resume. So anyway, let's briefly just bring this up, the whole Colin McNeil thing. Because again, these people, like, he's still actually at the publication. He's the guy that survived the layoffs, to my understanding. But he now oversees not just Upcomer, so he's even failed upwards again. So keep in mind, he's in charge of Upcomer. Upcomer fucking bombs and lays off all its staff. Colin gets to look over more websites in the Enthusiast portfolio. Must be nice, right? So anyway, back in 2021, I think, when we were about to do the Stockholm event, he did the thing, didn't he? He did the fucking classic thing that everyone was doing. And he said, the PGL major talent announcement has been subject to some controversy today. People are wondering and asking why more, read any, women are not included. And they should be. The response to that discussion on social media has been in large part disappointingly ignorant. Questioning why we're not seeing women in the lineup is not an indictment of the talent who are present, nor is it a call for any of them to occupy those positions. It's not a way to farm impressions or create controversy. It's a worthwhile question. People love to talk about meritocracy, just hire the best. And the last time I checked, the likes of Freya or Sapphire, etc., were the best. Now, this was at a time, right, before you see my reply, I'll put a bit of context. I'll spice up the gumbo with some context for you, right? This was at a time when we were all getting slammed and people were saying, you know, people like me should have been took off the broadcast. Like, I'd only just come back to do that one, essentially as a fucking favour to PGL. You know, PGL said they wanted to do this idea of, you know, all the legends. I don't think of myself that way, but this is how it was sold to us. You bring in all the legendary broadcast talent. We all have one last hurrah for the first major back, right? And so, yeah, okay. So I did it. But I told them when I came in, they said to me, and you go back and see all the content I made at the time to verify that I'm not just pulling this out of my ass. I said it at the time as well. They did say to me, you're going to be the host, so we want your feedback on who to hire. And I gave them a list. And guess what, guys? There were women on that list. Women I really respect in the industry were on that list. I put forward a bunch of names. And I even said so publicly. And ruled myself out for Antwerp. Right? Ruled myself out, even though they said, listen, you lit us the fuck up, but we'd love to have you in again. And I said, no. Get shocks, for fuck's sake. Do something right. I've had my time. So I even moved out of my role for a woman. Something, by the way, I have done multiple times in my career, including for Frankie. So the idea that it was some sort of clandestine, misogynistic old boys network at work. Loads of people told PGL, we want these people to work the event, and those people happen to be women, because we rated them, but PGL went a different way. So we were getting slammed, people were abusing me, people were even tweeting stuff like, you can't blame women for not wanting to be at Stockholm. That was their theory for a while. Women didn't want to work Stockholm, because I was there, and Thorin was there, and we're bad, and we're like, leading an incel alt-right uprising and some. So we were getting fucking wrecked on social media that day. It was ridiculous. Anyway, so I just said to him, the nerve of this guy to talk about meritocracy. And I said, mate, if meritocracy was ever applied, you'd be on the fucking streets. You want to go down this road, you're too dumb to realise if anyone is, you're the walking billboard for white male wealth privilege, because you legit can't do anything well. Now, that's fair assessment. You know what? Like, we all know the score, content, plagiarism, you know, accused of plagiarism multiple times, all on his watch, never apologized for it, never a mea culpa, ripped off Thorin's videos repeatedly, ripped off my podcast repeatedly. You know, at the end of the day, that had to be said, right? Then he tried to wriggle out of it, right? Because, you know, that's who he be. And he said, I don't think that's fair. It 100% is fair and nailed on. You really should look inwards on it. You know, it's fine. If you're not ready to really turn that hyper-perceptive beam you apply to other people onto yourself, I get that. That's like the final thing you really have to do if you want to evolve and become a truly enlightened person. But I don't think that's fair. I have benefited from privilege in my life. Would be dumb to deny that. However, I do what I do well. Right? Oh, okay. My bad. You're talking to the fucking king of esports journalism, by the way. So I don't know. If anyone gets to criticize you, it's me, pal. But this isn't about me or you. I was working the event, so it was definitely about me. It's about how the conversation surrounding representation shouldn't be met with instant vitriol on social media, he said, after implying that you know, there was a misogynistic application of non-meritocratic hires going on. And I just said, you're on a six-figure salary in a job you are woefully underqualified to do after a career predicated on plagiarizing your betters. Don't make me start dropping stories about how all your staff can't stand you. You can never talk about meritocracy, so shut the fuck up. And again, like, this is upcomer, you know. He was just a full fucking arrogant, insufferable cunt by all accounts. Multiple people said that. So, no replies after that. Just a block, funnily enough. But anyway, so this is problem number one. you know, your upper tier management, all of these dudes on six-figure salaries, and you've either got people who are really, really good and vital to the publication, but not good in a management role, or just Colin McNeil, who just, I don't even know what he does. He must lick a fucking wicked ass. That's all I can say. Then you come down to the editors, and it's like, editors in esports don't really seem to be editors a lot of the time. Like, that's another weird thing. It's like, again, it's a title that has no real meaning. I don't know any of these people. When you went and looked them up on Twitter, none of them were, like, particularly, like... I mean, Jason's an exception. But the rest of them were just, like, you know, very low amount of followers. Couldn't find any, like, exemplary works or achievements or anything like that. And that's your middle management team. They're the people, by the way, that are, like, essentially meant to be so qualified, they tell you why your English is bad, why your opening paragraph is bad. Like, here's the thing. When you write an article in American journalism, they give them names. They call it, like, the fucking... Obviously, you've got the lead is your opening paragraph. But then you have what they call a nut graph, right? Which I know that's... It's the nut graph. It's called that not because it makes you nut when you read it, because it's so good. It's called the nut graph because it's the fucking... You know, it's the nut of the story. It's the main part of the story. And writing a good lead and a good nut graph, you know, they're art forms in and of themselves. Like, you know, they're very two different types of skill. A lead has got to sort of essentially tell you, here's the story, here's what happened. Give you a summary without giving it all away. So you read on, and the nut graph has sort of got to tell you, this is kind of why it's super important and you should give a shit. And there's also going to be a few fucking motherfucking twists and turns if you come down and read the rest of the stuff below here. It's got to really be, you know, it seals the deal for the reader. Now, these are all like, I mean, I worked with an editor at Dot Esports. He's still there, back when it was the Daily Dot, and then when it branched off to Dot Esports. A guy called Kevin Morris, he was a professor of fucking journalism. He was a fucking legend at stuff like this. And by the way, when he showed me some of the reporting he'd done, it blew my fucking mind. He had written, you know, 6,000, 10,000 word feature-length articles. Unbelievably insightful. You know, been out in the field on some big major happenings. Was unbelievably tech-savvy. Was a lecturer in his spare time. Had an unbelievable grasp of the English language. One that far exceeded my own. Used to constantly correct, you know, the little grammatical quirks I have in my writing style. He was a great fucking editor, right? He was not on some exorbitant six-figure salary, and he's the best editor I've ever worked for. So anyway, then you get down, these are the reporters, right? And we all know George, and he's great, and we all know Yin Su. I think she was more doing video stuff for them, if memory serves me correctly. And then again, you look up these people on Twitter. And some of them even had, like, I think as low as, like, 20 followers. And what they're being paid to do is rewrite other people's news. That's it. And I'm telling you, that has no value unless you can make it work like what DeSerto does, where you take an influencer thing that's going to go viral because you're writing about news that occurs in one format, and that, you know, people can't share it on the other format in a digestible fashion. So what do I mean by that? You know, okay, I'll use example again. You'll never guess what Pokimane said. Pokimane, hugely popular. Loads of people want to know what she said. She said something on a stream. That clip's on her stream. Someone's clipped it. But you might not be able to go to Twitch. You might not even follow her, but you still might care about what she's saying because you're like drama. You're one of those people in the, what's it called? The commentary community, the biggest misnomer in YouTube. You want to know what it is. You can't get on Reddit and find it. You know, maybe it's not on the front page of Live Stream Fails. Maybe it's been removed on Live Stream Fails. You know, maybe people can't get the clip and download it and put it on video on Twitter. So what DeSerto would do is, you write up, here it is, you embed the clip, you put it up, you maybe even put some reactions into it, bish, bash, bosh, you've got a news. And that can go out on Twitter with a little fucking thing, a little preview, and people will spread that, and people will engage with it. And people will go, even as they click on it, yeah, DeSerto's clickbait, isn't it? Ah, but I've got to get enough of it, I've got to get enough, nom, 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 nom. That is an art form in and of itself, right? That's the only area where rewriting happenings has any value. If a website breaks a story and they go first and social media spreads it, but they broke it, their social media spreads it, everyone goes to their website to read it, and you write up, earlier today, HLTV broke this story, you've just wasted your time. You've wasted your time, because you're going to get a 50th, if that, of the traffic that goes there. It is a waste of time. If you can't break stories, you don't deserve a salary as a reporter. The end. You know, that was what was drummed into me back in the days when I was writing at local papers. You've got to get out there, get on the beat, work your own stuff. So, this business model, outrageously unsustainable. You're just throwing money. And, you know, when I think about what was worth reading on Upcomer, well, it was Theon's work, it was George's stories. Like, what else? What was there anything else, you know? I don't think there was. They also, as well, shattered, and this is how you have to blame management, they shattered their own reputation by numerous fuck-ups. I mean, I felt bad, because I pointed one out from a junior writer who then ended up getting fired, essentially, over it. And so I went and got him another job. I was like, nah, I'm not having that on my conscience. Because the criticism was valid, but they completely overreacted. So let's get into... Thorin has really been tracking all of Upcomer's bullshit in a way not even I can do. He's got some great tweets, though, about it. Here he is. Left Upcomer. Right. On Astralis' side, Philip Lucky Ewald put up an admirable performance against Nip. The young Harper was a bright spot on the team, easily filling the shoes that Device left. It was the rest of the team, the major winning core, that struggled, getting locked out of the game by a hot Nip. And then Thorin says, reality. And you can see there, obviously, this is the overall stats for Lucky. Not easily fill in the boots that Device, the shoes that Device left. That was just one example there. I mean, you know, that's like perception, so maybe you can criticize it. There was this. Where are the editorial standards, Upcomer? How does something go from someone being unable to anticipate when a player will return to confirmed will miss 100%? And you can see here, it's the Fnatic Director of League of Legends confirmed at a Scrum interview that Fnatic Upset will miss 100% of Worlds 2021. Correction. Here is the full quote from Dardor. Upcomer misinterpreted him, saying Fnatic cannot anticipate Upset's return. But how do you get that wrong? How is it he's 100% out to he cannot anticipate? That's such a wild error. Then also, obviously, Colin McNeil. You can see the scores, fingerprints all over this content video, the story behind what might be CSGO's greatest clutch. Like, in no way, like, no fan of CSGO that's watched this game for years would think it was that Kadian's clutch was the greatest clutch. It was a recent clutch. I'll give you that. It was a recent one, and it's 15 minutes talking about it. But yeah, just ridiculous nonsense again, just nonsense. And so anyway, when your reputation's bad, as a in esports, you sort of do live and die by that, really. And if you're gonna make all these elementary mistakes, and you know there's plenty of others that not just on Thorin's Twitter I could bring up, and you're gonna let the management keep their jobs, you made your own bed. It's very hard for me to sympathize at that point, unfortunately. And, you know, they fired the wrong people, sure, but that's always the way. Yeah, so at the other end of the esports spectrum, you have this. Just the insane, exploitative, what they call churnalism, which has now become an official term. So much so it's got its own Wikipedia page. I was looking it up. Churnalism was just sort of a little industry word that you use to describe, you know, publications that throw loads of shit at a wall and see what sticks. Now, this, right, is for Sports Skeeter. You can see 200,000 followers on Twitter. I've certainly linked to their articles on streams in the past. They're pretty well known. It's a website that has 25 million monthly users. It's currently valued at $10 million. But this is what their writers get. $2 an article. Two. Six if you make it about the NBA or NFL, right? If you're on a pay-per-click contract, which do exist, I've never been on one, despite people going, Richard does it all for clicks, my paper stays the same, mate. You can read the excellent work I do or not. I couldn't give a fuck. That's above my pay grade to worry about. I just do good work. Pay per page view, per 1,000 views. And this is the other thing people don't understand. Not all clicks are equal. There's a lot of Indian traffic that goes to these websites. And India's a big country. So a lot of it's valid, but a lot of it is, if you ever need a bot farm, there's a few countries that essentially offer bot farms as a service. And so as a result, there's two things going on. One, because India is a country with huge wealth disparity and has lots of problems with poverty because, you know how it works. Wherever you see wealth disparity, you're talking about corruption. Where there's corruption, poor people suffer and live in poverty while, you know, billionaires are created through corrupt means. Because of that, if you're like an ultra-high-end PC, well, I'm less likely to sell to an Indian viewer than I am to an American viewer. And that's how cynical and real marketing campaigns keep it. The other end is nobody can even discern with Indian traffic if it's genuine or if it's like could even be the publication trying to fudge the numbers. Loads of publications have done this, you know. So they offer loads less for like Indian traffic, Chinese traffic. And obviously the holy grail is, you know, your decadent West, your Americans. So you end up with 13 cents per 1,000 views, right? So even if you were on a paper page view, think about it, like you might get 100,000 views and then it's like, it's still worth fuck all. Tier one countries. Tier one countries. So the difference between, I mean, I don't even know what a tier one country is, by the way. What a mad thing to say. But you only get 19 cents for that. But that is the other end of the scale. You get what you pay for. And so there's a lot of writers and a lot of people in esports media that really are like, I don't know what, I mean, I don't know what situation you have to be in to think the time it takes to write an article is worth $2. I don't know. Maybe you can churn out, you know, 100 articles a week. Maybe that's plausible and walk away with $200 a week and that's not bad. But I don't know. It feels to me like that's ridiculous. Then at the other high end, you know, we've had obviously big, you know, media relaunches that just haven't worked out either. These sort of content creation companies, like here we go. This is Venn. Now you might not remember. You might not remember then, right? But they launched and they said they were going to be, I believe their goal was to be the MTV of video games. That was what they were going to be. They came out and did their thing. See here, look. The presentation fit with the grand ambitions of co-founders Ben Cousin and Ariel Horn, both of whom have years of experience in the gaming industry. For 6 years, Horn served as the head of broadcast and esports content at Riot Games. This was after nearly a decade in marketing and production at NBC. Cousin is the son of Gary Cousin, a co-founder of Babbage's, the company that would become the dominant force in gaming retail, GameStop. Cousin worked in marketing at Electronic Arts and Vivendi Games and started up several businesses with his brother Eric, including a poker restaurant chain in Texas and an odor eliminating clothing wipe company, Reviver, which was featured on Shark Tank. Now, you'll notice not really a lot of media expertise there, and they came in, and obviously Venn was a fucking flop. I mean, I was getting told stuff behind the scenes about Venn. Let me look at that quote. That they were just didn't even know what they were gonna do. Now, yes, COVID hit, it fucked up the studio. Like, I mean, COVID fucked up a lot of people wanting to do live content because of the rules around, you know, lockdowns and being in person and mask wearing, not ideal for TV. I'll be honest, it's still a bit of a pet peeve of mine when I see it now, because it's like, if you have to do an interview where both of you are wearing masks, personally, I wouldn't do the interview, because it's like, no facial expressions. Like, what are we doing here? This is fucking shit. Like, just do something else. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really stupid. But we're still doing it. We're still doing it. And it just looks garbage, I think. It's like, you know, I understand why you're wearing the masks. I understand why you're wearing the masks. But at the end of the day, it's not great content, is it? So just do something else. You don't have to do the interview. If the interview's bad, it doesn't need to go where, does it? But anyway, it says here, Venn was an exciting proposition for many of the people hired to bring it into being. When I got the job, I thought to myself, this is the best day of my adult life, a former producer tells Input. That producer and the rest of the more than 100 employees who were hired likely didn't imagine that within months of Venn launching, nearly all of them would be out of a job, and that almost 1 year to the day of that flashy trailer's debut, the company would enlist an accounting firm to help them look for an acquisition. Let's have a look at that flashy trailer, shall we? Well, let's have a look.
Gaming is everything. Our adventures. Our stories. Our wins, our losses, our passion, our community. And we're building a home to celebrate what we love the most.
Look at the state of the studio.
24/7
just a fucking neon hipster wet dream.
This arcade's got a little bit of everything, especially you guys at home in the chat.
We'll be diving deep into everything you love to play, watch, and listen to.
Streaming is our language.
You know all those questions that you're afraid to ask?
Because when it comes to life, things aren't just black and white.
I've got one hell of a challenge for you.
LFG is everything you need to start your fitness journey.
What makes good content? Imagination. And an apple for flavor.
Welcome to Venn.
Welcome and goodbye. You know, I never understand it because it's like, when I see those like trailers and I see that type of content, like, who's watching that? You know, think about the circles I'm in and the people I talk to on a daily basis. And I've just never heard anyone say, oh, did you see that thing on Venn? Or, you know, you see that thing on G4, you know? Like, never. It's never been brought up. And it's like, I also think conceptually, people don't really know how to have, like, good, compelling ideas for content. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, we watch a stream. We play games together. We do, yeah, it's like, it's all been done. It's so passe. Like, I can get that exact type of content in real time on Twitch for free anytime I want with people I've heard of. So why would this ever work? You know, it's really crazy. But yeah, anyway, 100 people just hired and laid off. And this is the publication Input. They interviewed more than a dozen former employees, all under the condition of anonymity for fear of affecting future career opportunities. Throughout the conversations, one point is made again and again. Despite its attempt to be the future of games media, they claimed Venn was one of the most mismanaged companies that any of them had ever worked at. It's a business, they say, that failed to understand its product and audience, with leadership that created a brutal work environment for employees. As one former worker wrote in an anonymous feedback form, the company issued after a round of layoffs in late 2020, Venn is extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile. A hyperbolic evaluation invoking a judge's description of some of the murders committed by serial killer Ted Bundy. Guessing not a happy employee overall. I don't know. I'm reading between the lines here. To describe Venn in one word, a disgruntled former staffer said, a nightmare. The heads of the company, they have no business ever running again any kind of production. They're in way over their heads. I've never seen a bigger shit show. A boys club culture The old boys club's back, guys. Top to bottom, a complete colossal failure. Venn wasn't short on money, to begin with, at least. Venn's Corsios, Cusin and Horn raised $43 million across two rounds of funding and told staff soon after launch that the company had cash to last through till the end of 2021. It also received two Paycheck Protection Program loans from the federal government's Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, totaling more than $2 million. So, $45 million in a year with government assistance. And they had to lay everyone off and created nothing of value. Right? And yeah, this is what I mean. It's like, there's two things going on simultaneously. There's not a lot of money coming in because the revenue models are fucked. No one looks at click-through ads. Ad blockers everywhere. Everyone's spending money on trying to get around ad blocker just for ad blocker to update how they work or a different type of ad blocker to come out. Nobody really whitelists. Everyone says they do. Nobody really does it. And it wouldn't matter anyway because, honestly, click-through ads are fucking garbage. And the other problem you've got now is you're in a competition with so many things free. Like I say, social media is now viewed as a content creation platform in the eyes of so many people. And so if you have a really compelling Twitter account that has loads of followers, if you've got a really compelling Insta account with loads of followers, if you've got a huge TikTok account with loads of followers, you can monetize that as an individual for no outlay whatsoever to a much greater degree than any of these media companies can do. And what sort of had to happen was there had to be a sober reflection about where the money would actually come from. It can't just be venture capital. It's got to be sustainable, or eventually you're going to crater and burn. And no one gets that far. They see $43 million go into the bank. They go, right, let's fucking splurge. It's like when you get your Christmas bonus from work. You're king for a day, aren't you? But when you're king for a day, you're fucking fool for a lifetime. And so that's the other aspect of it. As you've seen with Upcomer, as you've seen with Ben, we're going to move on to G4 in a little bit. All of these companies don't even understand the business model that they're in, you know? They don't really know how to make compelling content. They don't know how to monetize the content they do make. And also, G4 was a spectacular, unique case, wasn't it? Because what G4 did, G4 managed to essentially implode off the back of a very public, ridiculous incident. Now, I know the Chuddersphere made a lot of Froskeren's speech that she gave. And remember, I never did any content about that. I actually think there was nothing wrong with anything she said. You can disagree with it. Right? You can certainly disagree with it. But the idea she stepped over some sort of threshold that was worthy of the level of scrutiny she got. Sorry, guys, that's not true. That's not true. That's what she said was not really all that controversial. Long before she even did that speech, which, by the way, that speech, loads of people are now trying to go out and go, oh, we had no idea what she said. It was totally pre-screened. And, you know, she didn't just ad-lib it. They knew what she was going to say. They looked at the content. That's the whole point of the show. It wasn't like some unscripted diatribe that came out of nowhere. So, anyway, G4 became the latest gaming content network to close its doors. American gaming and esports network G4 TV has been shut down by parent company Comcast Spectacor just 1 year after it relaunched. Again, only made a year. You'll notice these things do not last long. The news first reported by Deadline came via an email to employees from Spectacor CEO David Scott, explaining the company's efforts to revive G4 from its early 2000s heyday didn't gain traction. G4 TV becomes the latest gaming content outlet to close down amid unfavorable global economic conditions. The end of the company will affect a few dozen employees and contract workers who will be assisted with finding new careers or repurposed throughout Spectacor's ongoing network. Now, I'll add this as well. The idea that it's economic conditions, like, that's partially true. But they tried, so they took a model that was popular in the early noughties before it shut down. And let's be real, the noughties were a very, very different time. We consumed media differently, right? Social media just wasn't a thing in the very early noughties. Even shit like YouTube wasn't a thing. Twitch wasn't a thing. Justin TV hadn't been fired up yet. So live streaming wasn't something that you could just easily go and do. That you were not engaging with the attention economy in the same way. I always talk about this. You have to understand, if you're in the entertainment business, or any business that demands time of a consumer, you are fighting in the attention economy for their attention. Because you've got finite time. You work 8 hours, you sleep 8 hours, right? And obviously, that's not even including the commute to and from work where you get bilked, or any overtime, or any of the other bullshit, right? So you have a finite amount of time you can divide your attention to. This is before you get hanging out with the wife, hanging out with the kids, doing all, you know, doing your chores as an adult, keeping the house tidy, all of that stuff. Then you might have like, 4 fucking hours left. 4 hours to get to enjoy yourself. What are you going to do with it? Well, why the fuck am I watching G4? Over doing anything else? I can read a book, I can watch a film, I can play a game, I can go for a walk, I can go to a football game, I can go down the pub. Why would I sit and give my fucking limited precious time to you? You have to give value. And unfortunately, the other aspect of it was they took a model that was built in a totally different time, did it again, and then it had none of the sensibilities that would have made it exciting. Like, you can cash in on nostalgia if you know what you're doing. But you can't just say, this is G4, right? This is G4 TV. Remember G4? Remember the good old days of G4? You go, oh, yeah, I do, yeah. Love to see it again. Oh, all the content's different. All the people are different. Apart from fucking Adam Sessler, the ever-living, I think. You know, all the content's different. All the people are different. The vibe's different. Now you're lecturing me? Like, G4 used to be, like, this, like, borderline edgy, you know, very, like, lads mag-oriented kind of humour, and everyone just lent into the bit. You have to understand, here in 2022, people don't remember what, like, 2000 to 2008 was like. People don't remember. You know, it was a time of FHM. It was a time of Loaded Magazine. It was a time of Jack Magazine, if anyone remembers that. The FHM 100 Hottest Babes was like just openly discussed on television. And when people won the award, they used to come out and it was a big deal. Like, Gillian Anderson got it that one year because of X-Files. Nuts Magazine. You know? That was the time that we lived in at that time. Everyone really had a better sense of humour. I'm just going to say that. People could laugh about controversial stuff. Edgy humour was very much in. Not always successful. Not always good. Not always sensitive. Certainly a lot of it didn't age well. Yes, I'm talking about you, Ahmed the Dead Terrorist. One of the worst fucking stand-up comedy acts I've ever seen in my life. Like a literal skeleton saying, I kill you, over and over again. While Americans, fat Americans, just baying with laughter. Right? The point is, some people would find that palatable and refreshing in this day and age where everything takes itself too fucking seriously. So you don't have to fully lean into it. But give me a bit of that piquant naughtiness that we used to enjoy so freely back then that nobody can enjoy now because you just have to be a humorless American dickhead to exist in the digital space. And you didn't. Instead, you created a pulpit through which to lecture people as if there wasn't already a million of those. I go to work, my boss fucking lectures me. I come home, the partner lectures me. I go to school, the teachers lecture me about how I need to do more with my kids. The news, I turn on the news, it's lecturing me. Why haven't you given money to charity, this charity, that charity? Why haven't you done this? Why are you using so much energy? What are you doing about your carbon fucking footprint? While an energy company, by the way, whoopsie doodle, we've just spilt a fucking tanker full of oil again into the sea. One of our pipes has burst. It's killed all marine life. Whoopsie doodle, that'll be a £10 fine. Naughty energy company. The biggest polluters in the world are them, but you're lecturing me. Alright, I get it, okay, fucking hell. I'll turn all the lights off, I'll recycle, I'll do anything. Please just stop lecturing me. Right, can I sit down to my entertainment? Turn on a movie. Well, of course, we had to kill him. He had privilege and power. Oh no, I can't even watch my TV shows anymore. Can I turn on the sports? Now rise for the 3-minute lecture. Oh, fuck me. Like, so, you're running out of areas to retreat to from the non-stop barrage of bullshit. And if you're another fucking if you're another entity that's going to lecture people, they're going to go away in fucking droves. Because everyone's sick of it, guys. We're sick of it. We get it. Yeah, we're scum. We're shit. We're not good people. Humans are not good people. We get it. We all need to do better. We get it. We're all going to try and do better. I promise. Please, can I have some fun? Can I have some fun in the 2020s? Is it allowed? Is it permissible? Where can I find it? People will go to where they can find it. It's as simple as that. I'm not using blasé bullshit about, oh, woke culture. Listen, some of it, we did need to get our fucking act together. Let's be fucking real. There were a lot of attitudes that persisted even as late as the 90s and the turn of the century that made me fucking blush to think they were mainstream. Remember, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, your beloved fucking Democrats, they used to go on fucking TV and just be like, yeah, gay marriage is an abomination. We believe marriage should be between a man and a woman. That was like a mainstream opinion in my lifetime. You know, we had a rule in Britain, we had a law, I say rule, an actual law, where teachers could never be, if you were a gay teacher, you were out. So yeah, look, not all of wokeness is fucking bad, but the persistent lecturing and scolding is just tiresome. You're not winning anyone over with that. So if you're an entertainment company, just, I don't know, let us enjoy our lives. We're all gonna fucking die. Can I have some fun before I shuffle off? Please. So anyway, sorry, sidebar. G4, you know, decided they wanted to go down that route and be a force for good. And okay, it's a noble goal, whatever. But your core audience were coming back for nostalgia. You know, and the content they got didn't reflect that. You can see here that the leaked internal email notes low viewership as a reason for G4's demise. The network's Twitch channel recently sits at an average of 1,529 viewers over the past month, according to Twitch Tracker. Now, you know what's mad? My average view is like 1,649. And think about the fucking shit out. So I'm lecturing y'all after saying don't lecture people about... I know, I'm doing a talk about how media's failing, that's all. I'm not lecturing you. You can do what the fuck you want. You can have fun. You can always have fun with Richie. Good time, Richie Lewis. But anyway, my average viewers are higher than that right now, as of now. And I've had some particularly low viewership lately because of the topics I talk about. So anyway, G4's downfall is not an outlier in esports today. 100 Thieves laid off members of its content team in July. Inven Global announced to clear out of editorial staff the same month. Ven, a similar content company, builds the MTV video games, has also gone bust. So you can see the problem, right? This has got nothing to do with anything. But there's a deluge of low-quality content as well. And it's everywhere. It's all over the place. And I've got to say, another problem you've got is that there is so much. There is just too much content. There is too much content. And it's very hard to sort of discern what's good from bad. And if you're new, people are going to go with the tried, tested and true. People are going to stick with what they know. People are going to go to the places they're used to and that they can rely upon. And so when you see stuff like this, because I want to do a whole thing on the esports LinkedIn grifters. Like, look at this, right? This is a guy on LinkedIn who does a podcast called himself The Prophet of Esports, who hosts the official podcast of esports and calls himself the master of the metaverse. And I've never heard of this cunt. Never heard of him in a million years. There's grifters everywhere. There's shit content everywhere. There's people being underpaid. There's people being overpaid. Revenue streams are fucked. So Jackson's not going to be the only one. Like, for real. Jackson's going to be just the latest in a long line of casualties, unfortunately. And it's a shame, because they are good guys, good people who did good work. They were not tabloid shit, as people say. And unfortunately, loads of talented people are out of jobs as a result of the current standing, where everything's going.